wow, 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 Freedom Fiends. Yes, we are beaming these words into space. Hey, Michael Dean, regular host of Freedom Fiends, couldn't be with us tonight. He is relaxing, getting a much-deserved day off. He hosts this show 7 days a week, and he deserves at least a little bit of a break. Here with you tonight, it's Derek J, broadcasting from Keene, New Hampshire, the Liberty Media capital of the world. And across the inner tubes is Chandler St. Pierre, the jabbering coon cat.
What's up?
Hey, man. That was some fine jabbering you had going on there earlier.
That was my robot cat.
Yeah, we were doing a little bit of riffing, and I'm enjoying that. I want to make a whole album full of this meow therapy we do here on the Freedom Fiends. Just makes me feel good.
We'd have to give that one away, I think.
Oh, yeah, it's a free album. All albums from now on are free. That's mandatory. Because it's 2014, we live in the information age. It's just too easy to share electronic music. Why charge for that?
Yeah, if somebody wants to pay for it, more power to them.
Right on. And we love talking about freedom on this show. I've had a freedom-filled weekend this Thanksgiving holiday. And I assume you have too, Chandler.
Yeah, I've had a really mellow weekend. It's been kind of wet and cold up here in the Northeast. You're not too far from me, so I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you know, you're in Maine, and I admire those people who are courageous enough to endure the cold of the Northeast. But how do you prepare for the winter in Maine? I mean, do you have special snowshoes and snow jacket and snow everything else?
Well, you know, I found that I don't think we're ever fully prepared. I put plastic on the windows, and I've been cutting wood since, well, I was rather late to the game this year. I started in late September, and got a little bit of wood cut, and I've been primarily heating my house with that. I finally had to break down this week and buy some oil. It's getting delivered tomorrow, because we've had a few cold days. But you know, Maine is so weird. The weather is just schizophrenic, because last Tuesday on my birthday,
happy birthday,
thanks, I went out hunting, and it was 60 degrees and sunny. It was such a beautiful day. I spent most of it out in the woods.
A happy birthday indeed.
Yeah. And then,
did you kill anything?
No. I haven't had much luck this year. I swear the deer have cloaking devices or something. I don't know, man. They're just not there.
I don't know.
See the tracks and everything, but they're just not out there when I'm out there.
They were all hiding on the road. They were all on the highway to this weekend. I was seeing tons of deer.
Well, of course. They're not in the woods. They're out playing around. But so yeah, you know, Tuesday 60 degrees and sunny, beautiful. And then Wednesday it dropped down to like 30, and we had a huge snowstorm. I think we got about 12 to 14 inches maybe.
I think it's awfully independent of you to cut your own wood. Is that how you typically heat your home?
Well, I've lived in this house now for 2 years, and I learned very quickly that heating your home solely with oil is rather expensive. And, you know, buying wood is kind of expensive. It's usually like, I don't know, $200 a cord. And last year I went through, I think, 4 cords. And
what is a cord? Well, I have no idea what that even looks like.
If I'm not mistaken, it's a stack of wood 4x4x8, I believe.
Okay.
Don't quote me on that. But it's a good,
oddly
good
specific.
Yeah. Well, that's how you measure the quantity of wood. But, you know, I will say I bought a brand new wood stove, and the new wood stoves are not as efficient
as
the older ones.
Why would that be? I thought efficiency just always increases. Why would they do something worse in future years than they did in past years?
It's like a lot of things out there, man. I think products just aren't built like they used to be. You know, when I moved in, I had
How old are you? Products aren't like they used to be. Really?
Well, you know, I mean, you look at, I mean, tools are a great example.
In my day, all tools were made of lead. We liked it.
Yeah, we did. You know, you could write with them.
What about stoves? What's your beef with the new stoves? What's wrong with them?
Well, I had a wood stove from the 70s that was in this place when I moved in. And I will say, it burned wood really quick, which is why I figured I might as well replace it. Because I said, well, you know, it's old and it's probably not as efficient. Doesn't burn as clean.
Sure.
Which was true. But it used to keep my house warm, man. I'm telling you, you know, you'd get that thing going. The top of the wood stove would get a little red if you got it really going, and it would be really warm. This new one, you know, I feed this all day, and it's not exactly cold in my house when the wood stove's going, but it's definitely not as warm. It doesn't distribute the heat as evenly. I don't think the wood burns quite as quickly, but it definitely doesn't distribute the heat as evenly. And with my old wood stove, you know, I could, I'd go to bed at like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and I'd stack it full, and there'd still be a good amount of embers, you know, at 6-7 o'clock in the morning. That's just not true with this new one. So I don't know. It's kind of frustrating.
It's pretty cool that you're using renewable energy, like reusable energy. Do you grow the trees yourself? Are they on your property?
No, actually, this year what I've done is I've just gone around on. I don't even have a truck, man. That's how redneck we are in Maine. I've got a little car, and I just keep my chainsaw in the car. And I, you know, if I go by and there's public land, and a couple of times I've stopped on people's land and asked them, and you know, if there's any.
Wow,
you gotta do it like. You know, like I said, I was kind of late to the game, so I had to look for a lot of wood that's already been down for a while and dry. But if you start, you know, normally you start about May, and you stack, you know, cut it up, stack it in your basement, make sure your basement's nice and dry, and just keep it there. And usually by October, you're good to go. And you know, it's pretty dry in my basement. Like I said, I cut up a lot of dry wood, so. It's been all right.
It sounds like an awesome skill for any person anywhere to have, to be able to chop wood, you know, take a tree down and use it for fuel. I mean, do you have any idea how much the average tree produces in terms of heat? I mean, how long can you get heat out of a tree?
I'm not sure exactly. Supposedly, if you have good seasoned wood and you start a good fire, and I stack mine crisscross. You can get about 70 to 75,000 BTUs of heat, which is good. I really
that
get
means
that,
nothing to me. I would put that in terms I can understand.
That'd be like setting your thermostat at about 70 degrees constantly.
Solid. Yeah, yeah. I could deal with that.
So
were you a Boy Scout?
For I don't know, a couple of months.
Where do you learn these skills, if not the Boy Scouts?
Well. I have good friends, you know. I have friends that have taught me a lot.
That's important.
One of my buddies used to, last year and the year before, he'd take me out to his father's woodlot and be like, all right, these are the kind of trees you want to cut. Like, he showed me, there's a lot of hemlock trees out there, and hemlock's really good for building and burning. When you cut it up and dry it out, it gets really hard, so it's a good wood to burn. And he showed me how to identify a lot of the different trees and what works and what doesn't. You know, I mean, poplar is a pretty common tree out there, and the kind that breaks really easy during ice storms, which is what we've had up here in the Northeast. And it's pretty plentiful, but I got a lot of that. But the thing is, it's such a soft wood, it'll fill up your wood stove with creosote, and it burns really quick. So.
Boy. Yeah, that's not what you want.
No. Hey, I mean, it's easy to get, but it's definitely not the good kind of wood, that's for sure.
So, dumb question, but is a wood-burning stove anything like a fireplace where it makes it smell all good? Like, whatever kind of wood you throw in there, you can smell that for a little while in your house?
Sort of. It's not quite as prevalent as a fireplace because, you know, your smoke is going out, you're going through the flue and out the chimney. But you can... You can definitely tell when you walk into a home if they burn with wood. It has that certain smell.
Okay, another stupid question. Is this the kind of stove that Ben Franklin invented?
I don't know, man.
I don't know. He had like a potbelly stove, right? And I don't know. Is that anything what yours looks like? Does it have a potbelly?
No, it's a square firebox.
So I want to know more about your Thanksgiving. I saw family. I went down to Philadelphia. We ate turkey. We avoided difficult conversations. And I think that was the smart thing to do. On Freedom Fiends, right before Thanksgiving, Ben Stone gave me and other listeners an education about the real story behind Thanksgiving, or rather the myths behind Thanksgiving, things about pilgrims that aren't so true, things about George Washington and Abe Lincoln and their relationship to the holiday. Very revealing, but we
propaganda.
Yeah, it's a lot of propaganda. And so I wanted to kind of talk about those things with my family, but I think it's better not to touch some of those difficult topics, you know, like the government lying. You know, people aren't, you don't need to bring that up.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't ready for it. A lot of people don't. I mean, I was specifically told, we went to a friend of my dad's, which is different because usually it's my dad and my daughter and a couple of his friends, a small gathering that we usually have at his house every year. And we went somewhere else this year, which was an adjustment. And I was specifically told my kid was cooking with my dad and she came home to get ready to go. And she's like, "Dad, Papa said you're not allowed to talk about politics or religion."
Now, why not? Do they just know, hey, he's this talk radio personality, is going to want to talk about these difficult things?
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty
much.
You know,
I like that controversy.
I do sort of, but I don't know, man. I kind of get short on patience sometimes. And yeah. So I've sort of refrained from talking about those things now, because I guess if you follow the traditions, you know, you're supposed to get together with family and friends and eat and be happy and be thankful and all that sort of thing.
It depends whose tradition. Some people get together and get it at each other's throats. And it's not just eating and being peaceful.
Yeah.
But what is it like for you? You keep it peaceful.
I keep it light.
So I had a difficult conversation, or one that I wanted to have, with this guy who was at our Thanksgiving. Oh, talking about the government. I wasn't the one who brought up the government, but I held my tongue. Now I'm going to release it.
Oh, it's so hard, huh?
Yeah. This is Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach, and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is, and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends! Calming the hamster in your brain. Yeah, you're staying up late, you insomniacs. Well, it's so good to keep it live with you here. Hey, it's the first day, if you're listening live, it's the first day of December here where I am on the East Coast.
That just blows my mind, man.
I know, we made it. We're almost at 2015, another year down. How was your year? We were talking about Thanksgiving just a moment ago, and I've got a great story about how I bit my tongue when politics came up. But how's your year been in general? Any great accomplishments this year? Or are you just looking forward to the next one?
I'm just looking forward to the next one.
Let's just keep it moving. Let's just... Years. Another year down.
It's been a whirlwind.
They're all the same, right? I don't know. I think amazing things can happen each year. You know, celebrities... I don't know. We remember the old celebrities who die. That's lovely. There were some good ones this year. But none come to mind. Actually, Robin Williams.
Robin Williams
was the one of this year that I think will be remembered probably the most. So I was talking about Thanksgiving. This guy was sitting next to me, and he's like a cousin's boyfriend, some unrelated guy. And I wanted to be extra polite because, you know, with close family, you can irk them a little bit. They're going to love you anyway. But with, like, strangers, you got to be really careful. So he brings up this great plan. We're talking about farming. One of my cousins does farming, and I'm like, hey, how's it going with the farm and all that? So we get on the topic of land. Well, the government apparently will give you money for not doing anything with your land, and it's called, like, reserves or something, okay?
Kind of like FDR did.
Right, and I think the intention is, hey, there should be certain spaces of land that nothing happens to because that's just good somehow. There's some public good that's derived from land sitting useless. And this is something that apparently people believe, and they made it a law so that the government will give people money for agreeing to do nothing with their land. So this guy and his family figured out that the government will pay you like $18,000 an acre to not do anything with it per year. And there's old families who have been in the farming business for generations who are like, ah, I'm ready to throw in the towel. Let's let the big guys of agribusiness handle this one. And they sell their properties, not knowing that the government will give them $18,000 for not doing anything with their land. They'll sell it for market price, which is about $12,000, and then anyone who buys up the land can just pocket the difference immediately. So, you know, you're one of these opportunistic guys who sees the writing on the wall, sees this opportunity from the government man, and you say, oh, hey, old lady, old man, I'll take your property off your hands. You get a loan for $12,000, you instantly get $18,000, and you get a nice little profit there. Now, where does that free money come from? You know, to the family who buys the property and profits from it, that looks like a nice profit. But where does that money actually come from? And how would a free market actually handle this situation? Because I think this is dealing in what I call perverse incentives, where people are incentivized to do bad things. Like, leave land useless. That's silly.
It is, and to me, that's called socialism, because that money that's supposedly free that you're making from the government is just stolen. It's stolen from you. It's stolen from me. And a lot of it's created out of nothing. It's printed. And I think a lot of this comes from that whole false environmental movement that pervades the bureaucratic culture of government. That's saying we must preserve the land. And it's very unrealistic. I understand taking care of the land, renewing it, and treating it well, because, you know, we only have one planet and we don't want to spoil it. So I get the whole, like, when people protest fracking and clear cutting and stuff like that. And that's good. But it's not natural for land to just sit and not be farmed for, you know, timber, wildlife, crops, that sort of thing. Land has been farmed for these resources for thousands of years, naturally, before governments stepped in. So to say that it's a good thing that we just leave this land alone and get wild, think about your forests of, well, let's just take the forests of Maine. Think about what happens when you don't take care of them.
It could be dangerous. It could lead to fires.
It can, and it does.
Not only that, all the food that could be produced there doesn't get produced, and the people don't get fed.
Yes.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
Meow, 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 meow therapy, worms. This is the Freedom Fiends. We have not been contacted. I have not been contacted by the government. Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government, Chandler?
I am safe, and I have not been contacted, though I got to be honest, even if I was, I probably wouldn't listen to them.
You wouldn't? Yeah, I wouldn't either. I think it's pretty safe. I don't need a warrant canary. That is my nickname here on the Freedom Fiends, Warrant Canary. And it is a way to let you, the listener, know that the show may have been contacted by the federal government. If we just stop saying worms, you will know that something is amiss. But I'm saying worms tonight, so everything's okay. Hey, worms. You know, I looked up a worms. I looked up a unique statistic while we were away, and I found this. By 1977, forest growth in the U.S. exceeded harvest by 42%, and the volume of forest growth was 380% greater than it had been in 1920. I think that's pretty remarkable. So there's more trees here in the U.S. today than there were in 1920.
Well, think about it. There's if you're a business, a lumber, timber business, there's an incentive to plant at least one, if not two, trees for every tree you cut down, because that's your future profit margin.
Yes.
So you have that economic incentive to renew the resource.
Yeah, that's exactly where I wanted to go with this. We were talking about the government paying people to leave land fallow and not do anything with it. Well, I think that's silly. And even the environmentalists out there who say, but it's good for the environment. Consider this. The increase in trees is due to a number of factors. Reads this article, including conservation and preservation. Yes, I recognize that. National parks did play a role. However, responsible tree growing within plantations and the different types of, like, planting more trees than they harvest is also responsible. I think it would be more responsible, because if you're a paper company, you make money when you sell paper. And you can only sell paper if you have trees. So your incentive is to plant as many trees as you can so that you can harvest them and make a lot of money. But if you are just being paid to let it sit there, that's not very productive. It's not very helpful. And I wish the government would just get out of the way. So this guy at Thanksgiving who's saying, yay for me because I can make a quick buck thanks to the government incentivizing me to leave this land useless. I say, hey, man, you're stealing not only the money that you get from everyone, you know, you're using stolen funds because the government has to take the money from somewhere. And they're taking it from your neighbors. So not only are you stealing from your neighbors, which is totally antisocial, you're also not producing anything to trade with them. I mean, you might be doing, you might have some other job. You could be producing something, but you're not using that land to help your friends and neighbors, which is a silly thing to do. This was in New Jersey, and New Jersey is one of the most densely populated states. We could be using that area to develop, say, houses or farms if necessary. So it's silly. I wish the government would get out of the way, and I think a free market would provide better solutions because they would have choices about what to do with the land.
Well, I think it's interesting. A lot of folks that would partake in this system you're talking about, where the government pays them not to use land, are the same folks that would rail against corporate control and these big mega corporations. How about if we had that land and we started farming on it and giving some competition to these big mega agricultural corporations? People don't think of stuff like that. And, you know, you talk about these government areas like parks and everything where it's off limits.
What's off limits? Oh, yeah, yeah, those national parks and stuff.
Yeah, you can go walk through them. take a look at those forests in particular. You see a lot of dead growth. You see a lot of trees down. And we kind of hinted to it before. That's dangerous for fires.
Yeah.
And it does. It's not a healthy breeding ground.
I don't even care about all of the environmental effects. Like, yeah, I used to work for Greenpeace. I care about the environment. But what I really care about is how mean and antisocial it is to get your funding from stealing from everyone around you and just say, well, it comes from the government. Like, we know better than that, you know? All adults know better than that. The government doesn't. No, they know. They know it in their hearts. They know that the government doesn't have money.
I really don't think that a lot of people do, man. I'm telling you.
So what should I have done here at Thanksgiving? Is it too much for me or any of the listeners to speak up when we hear about someone receiving free money from the government? Can we say, hey, that's mine. You're taking my money.
Well,
I don't appreciate it.
I commend you for holding your tongue.
Why? Maybe I did the wrong thing by not speaking up. Maybe you needed to hear the truth.
Maybe. I found my approach to that situation has changed a little in the past years.
Uh-huh.
Where, 4 or 5 years ago, I would have just started railing and probably come off sounding rather rude about how ignorant this person was. My approach now, if I were to address the issue with somebody, would just be to ask them a few questions.
And what would you ask him?
Well, I'd say, all right, so you think you get all this free money, right, from the government for not doing anything. First thing I would ask him is explain to me how money is free. Where do you think that money comes from? And that probably would start a huge topic of discussion if the person had more than two brain cells to rub together.
Yeah, I think most people would answer that question, taxes. They know that government money comes from taxes, but we all pay because we want the government to do like good things, like protecting the land.
Right.
So they're only protecting land.
So if they,
I'm playing devil's advocate here, by the way.
Right. So if they answer taxes, you could go in a number of different directions with that. And I would also, in that particular situation, I would go with the approach I was talking about earlier about how maybe leaving land just to sit is not such a good idea. I guess it would depend on the person.
Have you heard about the against me argument?
Yes.
I like this one. This was introduced to me by Stefan Molyneux, who uses this as his like trick to win any political argument is, I think, how he frames it. But it would be basically that I would ask questions of this man about my relationship to this, like, oh, so you like free money from the government for, you know, not using your land. Would you support, you wouldn't support violence being used to that end, right? You know, like, of course not. You know, he doesn't support violence. I would say like, oh, well, I disagree, you know, and you're not going to use violence against me if I disagree with you, right? And any reasonable person would say, no, of course I wouldn't use violence just against you because you disagree.
I think you have to be careful with that argument. It works really well in certain situations. In a situation like this, I don't know if you could go right into that because I don't think they would make the connection.
Well, but it's, yeah, exactly. That's the point. It trips them up because they don't see the connection at first. You say, oh, hey, you're not going to use violence against me. And they agree, of course not. I wouldn't use violence against you. And then you can point out how, hey, the government taking everyone's money without their consent and then giving it to you is you taking my money by proxy. You're just letting someone else do the work for you.
Yeah, and that's I've found talking with my family and even some of my friends, that's a discussion that's ongoing.
It gets emotional too.
It does. It gets very emotional.
Like I try and contain my emotions, but who can help it when they've just been, the fact has just been pointed out to them that they endorse the use of violence against their friends. I mean, that's pretty alarming.
Yeah, and like I said, most people can't make that connection, and they get very offended.
Mm.
And, you know, you can point out that by voting, you are engaging in that violence by proxy. But that's such a foreign thought because everyone has been so conditioned, and this will kind of lead into another topic we're going to talk about. They've been so conditioned that taxes are good, are necessary. They're for the greater good. They're for the betterment of society, which if you really look at it, they're not. I mean, all tax revenue collected just goes to pay interest on the federal debt, which is, well, that's a whole show in itself. But, you know, these taxes don't go to serve the public good. And again, why are we forced to participate? Like a classic example, and I can't use this one too much because I have a kid in public school, but if I have friends and family that don't, a great example is, why should you pay property taxes that are supposedly going to fund public schools when you don't have anyone partaking in those services?
Great question. I've always wondered that.
You know, you can't choose where your money goes. You can't choose to have this money that's forcibly extracted from you go to maybe, improving the potholes all along the roads up and down your neighborhood.
Well, wait a minute. Let me play devil's advocate here and put on my statist hat and say, hey, Chandler, I am glad to pay property taxes because I want an educated populace. You know, we can't vote and have a democracy or retain a republic or have any sort of limited government if we don't have an educated populace.
So my question would be, do you think that education didn't exist before the advent of government?
Well, what do you mean by that?
It's quite simple. Do you think that children and adults weren't educated before government was formed?
Huh, I see how you're turning this around on me. Well, yeah, but I've got nothing. I mean, what? Have you used that before? Is that why you're prepared? I mean, this is...
I haven't really used it. It just seems very logical to me to assume that...
Yeah, there was education before government. Of course there was. But I just feel like... I know. The statist would say, if I'm continuing with devil's advocate, yes, there is always education, but the underprivileged... There are some people who are denied access to education for whatever reason. They're too poor, they're a minority class, or whatever. You know, what about those people? That's why we need socialized education.
And socialized education has benefited humanity. How? I mean, if you think about it, the government creates these monopolies with education, and they force it upon everyone equally.
Force it, but at least it's equal.
Yes, the whole egalitarian society.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges.
This is Davi Barker from ShinyBadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at ShinyBadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Having outgrown childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in worms! What is Libertarians Against Humanity? It's the only unofficial Cards Against Humanity expansion pack by libertarians, for libertarians, and against libertarians. Libertarians Against Humanity is free to play online, or join the Indiegogo campaign to get physical copies and other perks to play with friends or statists you haven't defued yet. Because if we don't laugh, the statists win.
Not recommended for faint heart, thin skins, or those who easily rustle jimmies. Consult a physician if you experience drop blood pressure or laughter last longer than 4 hours.
That's LibertariansAgainstHumanity.com.
Meow, 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 meow. Meow, 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 meow.
Yeah, welcome back, Freedom Fiends. We are live and worldwide broadcasting from a windowed bunker here in the Liberty Media capital of the world, Keene, New Hampshire. And across me, across the inner tubes, is Chandler St. Pierre, the jabbering coon cat.
I'm lost in the interwebs.
Lost. And you just had a birthday. Happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you.
Many years, or many trips around the sun.
Yes.
On this spinning ball we call Earth. So, we were talking about our winter routine, our Thanksgivings, holding our tongue, so that we can... we don't have to explain liberty and why the free market rocks to every single person we see, or to every single person who thinks the government is just the cat's meow. Explain why. And or why not, Chandler?
Well, you know... Like I said, years ago, when I first came to Liberty, when I was one of those, I think Michael calls them newly minted libertarians, I would really rail about these sort of things and try to convince people that liberty is such a wonderful thing. And it is. Don't get me wrong. It is. But I learned from a friend who has passed, God rest her soul. She told me once that why would you spend so much time and energy convincing people that they should want to be free? That should be a natural state of things. And if they don't want to be free, don't spend your time and energy trying to convince them otherwise. They'll either come to it or they won't.
Yeah, man, that's like trying to convince someone to like chocolate ice cream. If you don't dig chocolate ice cream, that just isn't your thing. There's no convincing that's going to happen that someone's going to be like, hey, man, you really should, you know, the reasons for chocolate ice cream are far superior. You can do so much more with chocolate ice cream, like the arguments people make for the free market versus government.
Well,
but I think it comes down to a morality thing. It's not just practicality.
And there's two approaches. The first would be that... I just try to live it as much as I can. And I don't even try.
Freedom?
I live the principles of liberty and freedom as much as I can in my current situation.
Yeah, it's you chop down your own wood.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, that's independent living.
I get rid of that dead growth that's all in the forest and stuff. But, you know, the only time it bothers me, it's not so much that these people don't get it. It's just that... when they don't embrace these ideas and they embrace the ideas of collectivism and socialism, they're contributing to a system that helps enslave all of us. That's what bothers me.
Yeah.
So that's what I have a hard time wrapping my head around. You know, the arguments have been made, and I've spoken with many people. I have uncles who are avid hunters. One of them just... got elected to a local legislature. I can't remember which one it is. Good man. And Michael and I talked about that on the last show. And I have another uncle who's another down-to-earth guy and very avid.
Is he going to repeal all the laws?
Oh, I wish. He would like to. He's of that ilk. And like I told him, I don't think he's going to last
long. But you can't do that. You can't do that even from the inside. Like, a lot of people will say, oh, if you don't like the system, then work to change it. You know, like, work from the inside.
No.
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
I've seen a couple of people try to do that, and it doesn't usually end very well.
No, it really doesn't. And, you know, one of the things that was a constant topic of discussion between us is, you know, hunting licenses.
What about him? He supports that?
Well, both of these guys are avid hunters.
You need permission from the government or else what?
And I don't think that they agree that you need permission.
Well, I got mine. You should get yours.
And I can't do it. You know, I'm so opposed to that sort of thing.
Yeah, do you think it's a little bit of like, you know, they feel bad because they had to go jump through the hoops and now they want you to do it too?
Well, I think it's that. It's just that's the way it's always been done, which isn't true.
It's the way it's always been done. Yeah, man. But we got some imagination here, Grandpa. We can do things a new way. The freedom way.
A better way.
Without permission. It's better to ask forgiveness than permission, in my opinion. Do you agree with that, Chandler?
I would agree with that.
Worms. We'll be back. We've got a story about Oath Keepers and A Clockwork Orange. What do these two things have to do with Ferguson when we return? We've got the answer for you.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net. Do you believe in free speech? Jay Raven had her True Shives YouTube channel taken down. We believe this censorship was wrong, and we believe the channel is a clear example of free speech. Many people are bullied on the internet, but Jay Raven actually stood up to the bullying. She has filed a self-defense lawsuit against the individuals who took down the channel. The outcome of this suit could be very important to the future of free speech. Learn more at TrueShibes.com. That's Tango, Romeo, Uniform, Sierra, Hotel, India, Bravo, Echo, Sierra.com. TrueShibes.com.
Worms, 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 worms.
Welcome back, Freedom Fiends. We're live and worldwide this Monday, December 1st, 2014. And hey, it's the middle of the night, so if you are an insomniac with a hamster running around your brain, it's my goal tonight to calm that hamster.
It's the beginning of the morning.
Welcome to the morning. Good morning! And I still have not been contacted by the government. We're talking about conditioning, social conditioning, how people have been conditioned to not like freedom, to just love their servitude. And, you know, I'm not one of those people. I am obsessed with freedom. That's all I want. I want freedom. That's what I want. And that's what you want, Chandler. But some people don't want that, and you think you know why, because you read a piece in The New Yorker.
Well, I think a lot of it is people don't understand what freedom truly is, because it hasn't been properly defined. And I think freedom is different for different people, which is another reason that we run into this problem of people not wanting it.
Yeah, it means different things. Like, you know, there could be freedom for things, freedom from things. Like, I moved to New Hampshire. There's a lot more freedom in some ways. No property taxes, no sales tax in some places. And then in other ways, there's less freedom, like there aren't as many clubs. And that's the type of freedom that I enjoyed in Philadelphia, or freedom to, you know, there's like cultural freedoms that you can have when you're around more people. So anyway, yeah freedom is tough to define because it means all different kinds of things to different people. People want different things. But well, explain how this has anything to do with A Clockwork Orange. What, bring us there.
Okay, so I was on striketheroot.com, and they had an article posted that was from the New Yorker, and it's called The Clockwork Condition. And it's Anthony Burgess on his book, Clockwork Orange. And he...
What was that about for folks who aren't familiar? Can you briefly summarize that story, A Clockwork Orange?
There was a hooligan who... committed acts of violence, robbing people, maiming people, raping, and I think even eventually murder. It's been a long time since I've seen the movie. I started reading the book in high school and I never finished it, sadly. I'm going to go back and read it now.
So these were not happy pranks of hooliganism. These were like serious crimes.
Yes. This was very violent. And the state basically gets a hold of this guy and conditions him to be good, to be moral.
Oh.
And, you know, they use a combination of drugs and aversion therapy so that anything he associated with his previous life and of crime and violence would make him sick. Like one of the examples is he was a big Beethoven fan. And he would get sick even hearing Beethoven's music.
Wow, because he's not himself anymore. It's been conditioned into a new human.
So the crux of the article was why this gentleman, this author, doesn't trust the state. And I wouldn't say he came at it from a necessarily anarchist or libertarian bent.
Yeah.
I don't know what this guy's politics are, and it's not very evident. But the point he makes in the article is that morality or goodness cannot be imposed on an individual. And if it is, it's not real.
Yeah, it'll backfire big time.
It really will. We can't... he makes the argument that good and evil aren't properly defined, and when you try to impose your morality and a sense of goodness through force, it's not real. He brings up the ideas of free choice and free will. Let me see if I can find a quote. There's a quote in this article.
Well, while you're looking for that, I'm going to share with the audience that there's a... We don't even have to look to fiction to find a real-life example of this happening. Famous radio talk show host Mark Edge of Free Talk Live has publicly announced that it's because of the way morality was taught to him that he suffered the fate of being slapped with a felony charge in relation to participating in I guess as an accessory to murder. Like, he never murdered anyone, but he was charged with this crime for being a part of it. Well, he was saying, and he said this many times, that it's because of the way morality was taught to him, like, about the Bible. Like, it comes from on high. It's from external forces is where morality comes from. And once you learn, like, oh, well, I could just reject that, then there is no morality. And no, there absolutely is morality. It just has to come from within, right?
Yeah.
You can't be just conditioned to behave, or can you?
Well, I'm sure you could, but again, when you remove freedom of choice and that free will, it's not genuine when you're coerced.
Yeah.
It's like the popular meme and quote that's been going around in libertarian circles for years. If you need a law to prevent you from doing it, then you're probably not a good person.
Hmm.
So one of the quotes I really like in this article is... the author says, "What I was trying to say was that it is better to be bad of one's own free will than to be good through scientific brainwashing."
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. I totally agree with that. I mean, that's like what we see today with modern welfare state. I mean, here's all these people who are like, oh, I'll pay my taxes and that goes to fund the poor people, instead of just being like, I'm not going to pay taxes. I'm going to give my money directly to the poor people.
Well, and I wanted to bring something up. I asked the folks' permission. I know a group of a family who they spent their Thanksgiving walking around Boston, handing out blankets and food and items like that. And I saw their house before they left for Boston. They did it with their church group, but they did it independently. You know, they pooled their resources. They got a ton of supplies. They made a ton of food.
Aww.
And, you know, they were talking to police and homeless shelters and all that in the areas, both locally up here and in Boston. And they basically, because of all the bureaucratic nonsense, I guess you could say, they basically just decided to walk around with all this stuff and start handing it out to people in need.
Wait, what do you mean bureaucratic nonsense? There's bureaucratic nonsense that got in their way? This isn't the way they wanted to do it?
Well, you know, whenever you deal with that sort of thing, you have to deal with the cities.
Well, what do they have to do? Make sure they're not polio blankets or something, or what are the smallpox blankets, whatever the
I don't really understand it. I don't know for sure, but I know that they got frustrated talking with local police chiefs.
That is ridiculous. I mean, there are cold people out there who are suffering, and a blanket would really help them out. How dare anyone get in between a person and their blanket?
Well, and I think that's the conclusion they came to. And like I said, they basically just walked around, you know, and God bless them. I don't know if I would be bold enough to walk around certain areas of Boston unarmed, even though you're not supposed to technically be armed.
Yeah.
But they did, you know, and like I said, they had a bunch of food. Most of it was stuff they made, and some, you know, that some of the stuff was going to homeless shelters, and some of the stuff they were just going to hand out. And like I said, blankets, food, necessities for cold weather living in New England.
So wouldn't it be just as moral?
Did it.
Wouldn't it be just as moral, though, Chandler, if all of those people were acting under compulsion, if they had guns pointed at them and they were handing out blankets? Wouldn't that be just the same?
Not even close.
I'm wearing my minarchist hat again.
Right.
I'm saying, hey, what's the big difference between government-provided welfare that we see all around us today and this example that you're giving us?
Well, once you get past, when you're talking about welfare and helping the poor, you got to understand a lot of that stolen money is wasted in the bureaucratic shuffle.
Yeah, like $9 out of $10.
Yeah, it doesn't get to the people who actually need it. And I think these cats realize that, you know, I guess politically they tend to be more conservative folk, and they're very religious. And that's not, I'm not, you know, dissing them for that.
No, but like churches and religious groups were providing for the poor well before the government was.
Exactly.
They predate the welfare state.
And, you know, I think there's a certain amount of coerced morality even coming from those institutions.
What?
Because
they threaten you with, like, death and hellfire?
Well, sort of. I think that always has played a part. But I can tell you with these cats in particular, they had the means, the resources, and they were thankful for what they had. And they realized that there was a lot of people out there that didn't have. And they were just going to go out and help those people and expect nothing in return. They weren't going to expect redemption from God or redemption from the state or gratitude or gratification from their local community. They were like, this is something we can do.
It makes them feel good. Done. They get that in return.
Well, yeah, they do. They get the feeling of helping people who are less fortunate than them. And I applaud that, you know, and I really admire the fact that they just, you know, they tried to go through the proper channels and do it the right way. And it was so frustrating that they were just like, you know what, we're going to go out and do this. And they did. You know, I'm anxious. I'll get to talk to them tomorrow. I haven't seen them since the Thanksgiving break, but I'm very anxious to see how it went. And, you know, that's what would make this world a better place, is if we had more of that and less of this coercion of helping people, you know, through the state.
Yeah, dude, I'm right there with you. You know, I was at church today. I'm not a religious person, but something very similar came up. The pastor was talking about, you know, that they need to raise more money and all of the great services that they do. Well, you know, of course, the expression most people are familiar with is give till it hurts. But what this pastor was saying was give till it feels good.
Exactly.
He's right. You know, there
and
are a lot of people.
It's not forced.
Yeah, it's not forced. And, you know, you give a little bit of your income to someone who needs it. You feel pretty good about that. Go a long way.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons! Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Guns and Weed, Buy Sheep for Sheep on Sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Worms, Freedom Fiends, welcome back. Hey, have you been conditioned to love your government? Well, I'm here to break that conditioning. Yep. So, hey, no, that's not true. You know, you can love. I'm a lover, not a hater, not a fighter.
Me too, man.
And so I want more love everywhere. The thing I don't love, you can love governments. There could be voluntary governments, but the thing I don't love is coercion. When people say, you do not have a choice, you must do what I say. That, I got no respect for that. And there's a group of people who, they do not swear an oath to uphold whatever edicts the fascist dictator at the time pronounces. No, they hold an oath to the Constitution. The Constitution of the United States. And, you know, I may joke around that the Constitution is a useless old document written by slave owners. But it's got some good pieces in there. It's got some good ideas about philosophy, protection of individual rights, and how to have peace and freedom. You don't think so?
No, I don't.
Not even a single little bit? I mean,
no, I don't. I would suggest to anyone who believes that nonsense to read Boston Tea Party's Hologram of Liberty. That book is what basically turned me from a minarchist to an ANCAP.
Huh, okay. Minarchist being someone who believes in minimal government, and an ANCAP being someone who wants no government.
Right. Voluntary cooperation. And again, it must be stated, I've had to state this to several people, ANCAPs, anarchists, however you want to qualify them, don't necessarily believe in no government. Government is totally acceptable and moral as long as it's voluntary and you can opt out of it.
So maybe I would be more correct to say ANCAPs believe in no coercion.
Yes.
Okay.
The government that we're under now, according to the Constitution, it's a social contract that none of us signed and that we're forced to live under.
Yeah, it's coercive, definitely.
Yeah, and the subheading of the book Hologram of Liberty is the Constitution's shocking alliance with big government. And the book basically makes the argument that the Constitution was written by the founding lawyers to expressly create the sort of government that we have now. You know, when you hear a lot of the conservatives out there complaining about Obama or the liberals and all the big government nonsense that we see, well, this book makes a very, very convincing and well-documented case that the Constitution was written specifically to allow that sort of big government to grow to what it is today.
Yeah.
Specifically with the general welfare and the commerce clauses.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I have no love for the Constitution. But I do understand the Oath Keepers and their philosophy. And I'm not going to diss them. I applaud them for what I think their intentions are good. And, you know, they want to protect the people in their own sort of way. You know, I think they have a very limited and naive view of the Constitution.
Well, let me get into this and then we'll rip them apart. I mean, Give me a break. They haven't even done anything yet. Here's
I don't
the
even
article.
Want to rip them apart, though. That's the thing. I don't.
But you hate the Constitution. You hate America and freedom.
I don't hate anything. I just love liberty.
Well, this is an article from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. The author, Hoy Mach, writes, Ferguson, following a night of arson fires and bashed storefronts that hit close to home, Greg Hildebrand stood naked Tuesday, drying off from a needed shower, when he noticed somebody on the rooftop. I opened the window and said, Hey, can I help you? Said Hildebrand, age 35, a website developer. The man said he was security and would be up there at night with others to protect the pocket of second-story apartments and lower-level storefronts near the Ferguson Police Department. A day earlier, rioters had broken out windows below Hildebrand's apartment in the 100 block of South Florissant Road and torched a nearby beauty supply store. I'm in the middle of a difficult spot, Hildebrand said. I feel a lot better having those guys up on my roof. He wasn't exactly clear who those guys were or where they came from. Puzzled and alarmed protesters have wondered, too, some accusing the mysterious guards in military fatigues of being the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Well, it turns out, in fact, they're volunteers affiliated with a 35,000-member national organization called Oath Keepers.
Worms.
Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
Welcome back, fiends, worms, and all that. We're talking about Oath Keepers. Have you heard of Oath Keepers? Yes. Apparently, 35,000 members strong. That's quite a number. I had no idea they were that populated. I'm reading here from oathkeepers.org/about. They've got some information about their group. And I've skipped down to the oath part. What is their oath that they're apparently keeping? Well, they say that they swear an oath to uphold the Constitution and the orders that active duty oath keepers will not obey. So this includes a list of things that they will not do. Number one, we will not obey orders to disarm the American people. We will not obey orders to conduct warrantless searches of the American people. We will not obey orders to detain American citizens as unlawful enemy combatants or subject them to military tribunal. We will not obey orders to impose martial law or a state of emergency on a state. Now, that's an interesting one, and I'll return to this list, but most of the oath keepers are active duty or retired military or law enforcement. So if they're talking about not obeying orders, I mean, wow, that's pretty heavy. I mean, that means they're going to say to a commanding officer, no. You told me to do something? No. I'm not going to do it.
I hope that's the way it plays
out. Well, yeah. I mean, the state of emergency thing already happened in St. Louis, right? In all of Missouri. Didn't they declare a state of emergency? Well, apparently, according to this, oath keepers will not obey orders to impose martial law or a state of emergency on a state. So, I mean, that could be huge when the state of Missouri, the governor says, no, it's martial law and I'm imposing a state of emergency. How many of those 35,000 oath keepers are inside Missouri and are going to say, nah, we're not going to follow those orders? That's pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah, I'm glad that we have individuals out there that who believe in this sort of thing and are willing to go along with it. I just wonder if it's enough, and I wonder honestly. And I am a fan of Oath Keepers. Don't get me wrong. There's the 3% movement, the Oath Keepers, and I appreciate what those cats are doing. But I just wonder, when things get really, really hairy out there, when push comes to shove, how many of these cats are really going to stand up for that?
Well, they're already doing it, according to this article. They're already patrolling the streets and trying to keep people safe, trying to uphold their oath to the Constitution. I think it's pretty rad. And, you know, what I discovered in my years of activism is that it's not about the chain of command. You know, it's not about the generals and governors up on high who make decrees. No, it's about the followers down below. It's about the obedient ones, the chain of obedience. And it's about those people like you and me and the law enforcers and active duty military who have the power to either say, okay, I'm going to go along with that order, or no. Well, I'm not going to obey that.
I think Bill Buppert from ZeroGov.com has stated it quite well several times.
What's he say?
Without compliance from these police and military forces, no tyrant could oppress anyone.
Hmm.
You know, because their power of oppression of the people comes from the willingness of their police forces to carry out immoral orders.
Worms. So I'm going to rush through the rest of these Oath Keeper top 10 list here that they've got. The pledge not to obey, as I'm going to call it. And jump in here if you have anything that you want to add to this. But here's the list. So we've gone through four. Number five, we will not obey orders to invade and subjugate any state that asserts its sovereignty. Six, we will not obey any order to blockade American cities, thus turning them into giant concentration camps. Number seven, we will not obey any order to force American citizens into any form of detention camp under any pretext. I'm a little paranoid about the concentration camp thing. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah.
Well,
it's happened once in American history, as far as I know, to Japanese Americans during World War II. But,
well, you don't even have to look that far back. I mean, if you look what happened during Hurricane Katrina.
Were people put in concentration camps? They were sent to the local football stadium, right?
Yeah, the makeshift FEMA centers, and I would argue that that's the same thing. You know, these people were disarmed and forcibly interned in these zones that were considered safe. I don't know if I would consider that a concentration camp, but
they said detention. They said they used both terms: giant concentration camps of blockading American cities, or forcing American citizens into any form of detention camp. So they'd be detained, right? They're detained.
Yeah, I think that definitely qualified.
Cool. Number eight, we will not obey orders to assist or support the use of any foreign troops on U.S. soil against the American people to, quote, keep the peace or to, quote, maintain control. Well, that's a reasonable one. So
I think that's probably the biggest one.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. You know, if I could support these cats on anything, it would be that.
Could you imagine if a bunch of Chinese troops came into the U.S. and started trying to keep the peace from American riots?
You know, I've talked about this on my podcast, and I think I've even talked about it with Michael several times. It's not that far-fetched to believe something like that could happen.
Oh, come on. That's baloney. That would never happen.
Right, right.
People wouldn't stand for it.
Right, right.
No, I'm for real. You think I'm still wearing my minarchist hat. I'm for real. That's not going to happen.
No, it totally could happen very easily, because if you look at how the UN operates, okay? So the UN... Yeah, we ain't going in the Twilight Zone yet. So you've got these failed states, right? These states where democracy has failed.
Yeah, the failed state project.
There's looting and there's rioting and there's disorder and the government can't seem to control their populace.
Yeah.
So we send in, you know, UN and NATO task forces under the banner of a coalition to spread democracy and free the people. So when an economic collapse hits this country and people start behaving irrationally on a large, large scale, much larger than we're seeing in Ferguson, do you think it's totally out of the realm of possibility for these UN forces to come in and impose and maintain order and restore democracy?
I don't know.
This failed state.
Oath Keepers are going to give them a run for their money. Real quick, the last two. We will not obey any orders to confiscate the property of the American people, including food and other essential supplies. And number 10, we will not obey any orders which infringe on the rights of the people to free speech, peaceable assembly, and to petition their government for a redress of grievances.
Well, that's cool. And did you, I missed it. Did you read the one about them not disarming the populace?
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
they're not going to disarm the American people. They actually, I don't know if they used that term specifically.
I think that's a big one, too.
Yeah, but they say they're not going to confiscate property. I would think that's considering just, oh, yeah, disarming is the first one. We will not obey orders to disarm the American people.
Yeah.
Now, but they already did that, as you mentioned, during Hurricane Katrina, right? They went around to different parts of, where was that? In Louisiana?
Louisiana, yeah. Well, yikes. There's the famous video of that older woman who had the little 32 six shooter and, you know, the National Guard basically beat her up and stole her revolver and forced her to go with them. She was like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying in my home. And
meanies.
Yeah.
That's probably what inspired a lot of those 35,000 Oath Keepers, hearing things like that. Like,
I can imagine it probably did. I mean, yeah. It was striking to watch that. I think it was a wake-up call to a lot of people, you know, that say, oh, that can't happen here. You know, that's such a fallacy to believe that tyranny can't flourish in this country, like we're exempt from it. I mean, come on.
Well, let's learn more about this group, Oath Keepers, because they're, I mean, I've heard of them, and I've even met some Oath Keepers, but they're still relatively new to me.
Yeah, I mean, when I did my old podcast, I had the pleasure of getting to talk to Stuart Rhodes and Michael Badnarik.
No way!
And both are very... I have a lot of respect for both those guys.
Now, Stuart Rhodes, for those who don't know, is the Yale School graduate and libertarian who founded Oath Keepers in 2009.
Yes. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for those guys. They may be Mainstaters, but they're very principled and very decent people.
Yeah, man. They're doing a good thing by, they have principles and they want to stand by them. They don't want to just let tyranny come to the U.S. They care about this place. They care about the people here. And they're not going to obey bad orders. And I live by a mantra that good people disobey bad laws. So if a government ever came up with a law like, you have to disarm everyone, or you have to steal people's homes, or, you know, whatever the bad law is, it's incumbent upon those people in law enforcement and the military to say, no, I have a conscience, and it's not going to allow me to do those things.
Well, you know what I thought was interesting in this article? There's a line that says Rhodes, who says he is a Mexican-American, which I don't know why they threw that in there, stressed that the Oath Keepers is not an anti-government. It's very interesting that anti-government has become synonymous with bad and evil.
Yes.
And dangerous.
Yes.
I would consider myself... dare I say, anti-government? You know, I like the term "no government man" much better.
Anti-government seems to imply that you want some sort of violence or chaos or lack of order. Whereas,
yes.
How is it you put it?
I just consider myself a no government man. I mean, you've seen me, man. I'm a total. there. You know, we're both lovers, not fighters. I mean, I do carry a gun with me everywhere, but I'm a very peaceful person. I believe in resolving conflicts and disputes peacefully.
So, yeah. So what's your point, man?
I just think that the spin of anti-government is wrong.
Yeah, we got some good people in government. We're going to talk about them when we return.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Meow, meow. Meow, meow. Meow, meow.
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 Freedom Fiends? Worms. Yeah, man, we're talking about Oath Keepers, those who say they will obey the Constitution and they will not obey tyrants and the new laws they decree, be it martial law or disarmament or throwing Americans into detention camps or assisting foreign troops. They're not going to do any of that. And right now, it appears they're helping some stores in Ferguson.
Which is really awesome.
Which is cool. That's the kind of direct action sort of stuff I want to see. People yeah. standing up, taking personal responsibility for safety in their community. And in other communities. I mean, that's really brave. There are some people coming from other states just to protect the properties in Ferguson.
Well, I think they did the same thing with the incident at the Bundy Ranch. I believe Oath Keepers came from out of state to show solidarity with this cat.
These guys are like superheroes.
Yeah.
According to Rhodes, he says, we thought they were going to do it right this time, Rhodes said of a government response to the grand jury decision. But when Monday rolled around and they didn't park the National Guard at these businesses, that's when we said, we've got to do something. And he's right. You know, he waited for the government to do their job. Unsurprisingly, they didn't. And he was like, all right, if they're not going to do what's necessary, we will. Historically, the government almost always fails to protect people, he added. And, you know, it's not just that they fail. They're not obligated to protect you. I don't know if you knew this.
Think they want to either.
No, it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous to be in the protection business. And it's much safer to hide out and wear protective riot gear. And I don't know, where are the police stationed? I guess they're hanging out with the protesters, right? Those are the real troublemakers, not the people looting businesses and setting things on fire. Anyway, in the wake of Monday's grand jury announcement, Oath Keepers put out a national request to help members to help in Ferguson, and volunteers showed up from Nebraska, Texas, and Indiana. They wouldn't say how many people are part of the effort or exactly where they're placed, but it seems like they're in the downtown area. And they say that we're here to volunteer our time and make sure everybody's safe. Another leader who only went by Sam, he described himself as a weapons engineer from the St. Louis area who's done security contracting for the U.S. government. And he was motivated by a story he saw on CNN about damage to a cake shop and said, you know, I just got to go down there and help this person. The owner of the cake shop started crying when she found out that she was going to get his support. The article concludes that the volunteers are well aware of the risks to their life, but they're also aware of their legal right to stop it from happening. And that's why I want to...
And they think they have a moral duty, and they recognize that.
Yeah, not only that. I mean, the people in the businesses, they're giving over, like, quote, We gave them our keys. We didn't know how. We didn't know much about them, but we got a feeling of trust. You have to do something to protect your building. So one of the owners of one of these buildings said he just gave over the keys to these Oath Keeper guys. Would you do that to the police? Would you be like, oh, hey, cops, here's my keys?
Not a chance.
No. And with good reason. So this is redemption in the third act. And how are we going to redeem it here, Chandler?
Well, I think despite our differences in philosophy with Oath Keepers, I do believe that they're doing a good thing because they believe in protecting those who can't protect themselves. And they're not being forced or coerced to do it like the police supposedly are. You know, they're supposedly there to protect and serve, and that's arguable. But no, these cats are really walking their talk. And they want to help their fellow man, and they're doing what they can to prevent that property damage, that violence, that theft. So kudos to them.
Yeah, man. They're taking personal responsibility for the things that we should all care about.
And they're not getting anything out of it. That's the other thing. It is really selfless.
Well, I hope you've learned something tonight, and I hope we've calmed the hamster in your brain, whether you've learned how to cut down trees and use them for heat to become more independent, or to protect your neighbors and their property from arson and vandals. You can change the world. You can produce a more peaceful future. Just take some personal responsibility and some imagination.
Worms.
Worms. Thank you, Chandler. Thank you for your service. Michael Dean will be back tomorrow. Worms.